And we're very happy tonight to have Sarah Outen on our program. And Sarah is a 28-year-old British adventurer. She has just become the first woman to row from Japan to Alaska, which is a journey of about 3,750 miles, and she did it in 150 days. And as epic as that adventure is, it's only one leg of her current expedition, which is London to London, which is a journey of 25,000 miles going around the world using only human power. Sarah, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
You know, and most people think of a trip of a lifetime as like flying to Hawaii for 2 weeks or maybe going on a Mediterranean cruise. How did you come to start to think so big?
Well, 5 years ago now, I rowed across the Indian Ocean. That was my first big solo expedition. I rowed from Australia to Mauritius, and it took 4 months. And whilst I was out there, I started thinking about what I would do with the next chapter of my life. And having enjoyed that journey so much, the challenges and kind of unique relationship with your surroundings that solo expeditioning offers, I thought, well, actually, I'd really like to extend this human-powered mission and make a global journey that takes in both land and sea so I can meet people as well as wild places, and that's how it came to be.
Now, what you've done so far, you're over halfway, it seems to me. You still have a leg by kayak, and then you have a long bicycle trip across Canada and the U.S., and then a major row all the way back home to London. But you've accomplished an awful lot of miles, both by bike and by rowing, already. This latest trip, which you just accomplished, was one that you had tried earlier and due to a tropical storm weren't able to complete.
That's right. My first attempt on the Pacific Ocean was last year, 2012. I set out from Japan in May and was headed for Canada, which was the same original intended destination as this year's journey, in fact. So I set out and was out there for about 4 weeks before we got caught by Tropical Storm Mawa and had to be rescued. The boat was too badly damaged for me to repair it myself and continue. So I was picked up by the Japan Coast Guard, and unfortunately my boat was left at sea. Although the really unfortunate bit, which meant that we couldn't recover my boat afterwards, was that the Coast Guard sort of unwittingly took the tracking unit from the boat. They thought it was a cell phone, so they thought they were doing a good thing, whereas in fact, actually, it would have been great to have the tracking beacon on the boat so we could follow the boat and pick it up at some later point. So I returned home to the UK, and by a stroke of luck, and another boat, the sister boat to that original boat, was for sale, and the insurance and lots of sort of hard work allowed me to purchase that boat and make a second attempt this year. I'm really glad that we managed to land safely in Alaska, which I think is an even better story than my original plan of going to Canada. I changed the route because we just weren't making progress to Canada. Bad weather and contrary currents had thwarted that mission, so we decided to hang a left and make for Adak Island in the Aleutian chain.
Can you describe to people briefly your boat? Because it's hard to envision a boat that's small enough so one person can row it and yet large enough to have all your equipment and live on it.
Yes, quite a contrast, isn't it? So the boat is 7 meters, 21 feet long, and probably at its highest point is stands about a meter, maybe a meter 25 off the water, so sort of 4 feet off the water, the top of its roof. And it's divided into three parts, three sections. There's the forward cabin, which is for storing equipment, supplies. The central area, the deck area, that's probably about two or three paces long, so quite a small space. That's where I row. And then the back cabin is my sort of sleeping cabin, my office, my pop-up kitchen, Everything that doesn't happen outside happens in there. And again, I can store things in there. And it sort of reminds me of the lifeboats that you see on the side of cruise ships. You know, it does look like a capsule, very much a self-contained unit. And if the boat capsizes, it will roll back round again. The physics of it mean that it will right automatically.
Now, you spent 150 days in that boat. That's, I believe, over 3,000 miles, I'm not positive, at sea in that boat. By yourself, it's a pretty unforgiving way of traveling, because when you're not rowing, you're not moving forward, and you can't row all the time. You have to sleep and eat. The mental aspects of being alone and facing big seas and worries, this had to be a major part of your whole expedition, getting through this part of it.
Certainly. I think describing it as unforgiving is a really good word, and relentless. You mentioned that when I'm not rowing, the boat isn't moving forward. Well, sometimes the boat does move forward. That's a happy day when you get sort of 3 miles with the wind or the current moving you in a good, useful direction. But there's plenty of times where the wind is blowing sort of straight on, sort of head on, and so you're blown backwards, or maybe some contrary current pulling you away from your intended goal. So many times where I, you know, had to recover the same ground again and again, just trying to move the boat forwards. It is an unforgiving place, really. It's unforgiving if you make mistakes. It's moving all the time. It's wet. Huge extremes of temperature. And to manage all of that by yourself and keep yourself healthy and the boat systems healthy as well, the electronics, the communications, the water-making systems, that cumulatively is really very stressful. And certainly towards the end of the trip, you know, I was getting really quite exhausted. And was very glad to make it safely ashore and have some other people look after me for a time.
As I read about this segment of your total expedition, I also read that you capsized 5 different times with the boat. And I'm trying to visualize. I know that you were strapped in, whether you were sleeping or rowing or whatever. What happens when the boat capsizes?
Yeah, I was really lucky in that. Sort of preempted all of those capsizes. They were all during quite severe conditions, sort of storms, essentially, when you're not rowing, and had the sea anchor out. So the sea anchor is like a parachute which goes under the water on a long line, a long rope from the front or the back of the boat, and it acts like a stabilizer to hold the boat perpendicular to the waves, so that hopefully you're more stable, you won't capsize quite as often as if you didn't have that there. So having sort of preempted those conditions, I had prepared the boat as best I could, you know, stowed everything away, tied things down, and that included sort of keeping myself safe as well. So as you mentioned, I was literally strapped into the bed in my cabin with a sort of like a racing-style harness that you get in racing cars. And although that kept me safe, you know, I didn't injure myself in those roles. It is really frightening when that happens still. You know, your whole world is upside down and you can see out through the hatches, sort of the window. There's a window by my head and one by my feet. So as the boat rolls, you just see this kind of foaming mass of green, white water, or at night it's dark but sort of illuminated by the glow from the lights on the boat. And it's certainly not a nice experience, but you're always really happy that the boat kind of performs and brings you back around safely.
So the boat is designed to right itself automatically?
That's right. Yeah, you put the heavy things in the bottom of the boat and make sure they're all tied down. And then the volume of the cabin, those two cabins I mentioned, the forward and the back cabin, that just makes the boat very unstable when it's upside down. So it naturally wants to roll back round. I think it probably only takes a few seconds for that to happen, but of course that feels like a lifetime when you're hanging upside down in this harness, watching water.
When you got
crazy outside.
I'm sorry. When you got to Adak Island and your friends were there, the local populace was there to meet you, you get out of your boat. Could you walk?
I was a bit wobbly for a few days. Certainly, from time to time, I would just fall over, sort of almost randomly, really, or wobble as I went upstairs. But I was quite surprised, actually, at how quickly my legs had adjusted to being on land. I mean, we're 2 weeks on now from that first those first steps on shore, and my feet are still hurting. But by the end of every day, my feet are, you know, are hurting from having been standing up so much. But previous experience tells me that within sort of a week or two now, that should settle down and become easier.
Now, prior to this, you had done what in itself, again, was just an amazing journey, and that was a bike ride through Europe and through Russia, China. I don't know if you were in Mongolia or not, but all by bicycle, ending up in Russia's Far East, which is pretty wild country. What an amazing journey. That was, 10,000 miles or something? No, that was 16,000, was it? No, 10,000.
Well, the first part of the journey, this London to London expedition, I started in London, April 1st, 2011, kayaked down the River Thames and across the English Channel to France. Then there was 6 months of biking, as you mentioned, through Europe and Asia, through some fabulous countries, just really diverse, interesting places, out to the far edge of Russia, which, as you mentioned, is a wild and sort of beautiful, rugged place. And then from there, there was actually about 2 months kayaking and biking down to Japan, so using the Russian island of Sakhalin as the sort of stepping stone down to Japan. So first year of the project was that combination of cycling and kayaking, and a wonderful contrast to life on the ocean. You know, it's a solitary life out there on the waves. The world feels both tiny and huge out there in that little boat, but the sort of the overriding sense that I had as I cycled across all those countries and kayaked through various areas was, yes, this huge sense of sort of diversity and contrast, but also very kind of, sounds really obvious to say it, but that, you know, we're all the same, this very kind of human connection running through that. So yeah, it was a wonderful contrast to the ocean journey this year.
We're speaking with Sarah Outen, and Sarah is an adventurer. She's in the midst of an epic expedition, really, going around the world by human power. She's just returned to New York City, where we're speaking to her from Adak Island, Alaska. On this bicycle trip, I mean, you were going through the steppes of Asia, you went through the Gobi Desert, the mountains of Japan, the far, as we said, the far eastern part of Russia, some really remote places. Did you have real safety concerns? Here you were by yourself, carrying all your gear on a bike and camping out at night.
That's right, yep, camping out at night, or often taken into people's homes. People would invite me in to stay for the night and sort of share their food with me, which was a really, really beautiful sort of privilege, really. It felt very, I felt very lucky to sort of be invited in like that. And safety-wise, no, I didn't ever really have any safety concerns. I mean, you're always aware when you're traveling solo, you always like to be nice and aware of where your bike is and who's around. But I was very lucky in that, bar one tiny incident in Kazakhstan where somebody who I think was a bit drunk had wandered off with my bike and pinched the sleeping mat from it. Everybody was very helpful, very, very warm and welcoming. And the biggest safety concern, as with anywhere in the world, really, is road traffic. You know, I still feel very lucky just not to have been knocked off the bike or squashed under the wheels of some tired truck driver.
I was reading through your blog, and in your blog you're answering, because of the educational aspect of your journey, you're answering a lot of youngsters' questions. And one of the questions that one of the youngsters asked you was, what was the scariest moment during your journey? Do you remember your answer?
I think my answer at that stage would have been where I nearly peed on a snake.
I turned around
after. That's it. So that was the answer at that time. But having just completed this row, I would now change my answer to the day that I was nearly run over by a cargo ship.
Oh.
It was just a few days out from the end, a very foggy day. And I could hear an engine. Woke up in the morning, I could hear a boat's engine, but I thought, this is really strange. It seems very close. And there's nothing on my navigation equipment to tell me where this boat is or who it is. So I thought, this is odd, and popped my head outside, and the noise was becoming louder and louder. And I noticed a light coming towards me as well, and I thought, blimey, it must be an aeroplane. And a second later, I saw the sort of rising black front of a boat coming straight to me. And there's a kind of fraction of a second's decision where you calculate you can't do anything useful, like turn the boat around or row it out of the way. So I just leapt back inside and slammed the door shut, sort of held on as the boat went right past us, just meters away.
Wow.
And luckily the bow wave pushed us away. So, you know, we rocked about a bit, but we were okay.
That's an amazing story. Now, right now you're in New York City and you're spending some time with your fiancé, and that just happened on your last trip. By telephone, you became engaged. Is it going to be difficult to leave New York, and get ready to go on the next leg of your journey? You've been through an exhausting previous trek.
Yeah. So Lucy lives back in the UK, so I'll be heading home with her tomorrow.
Okay.
I just figured that New York was a nice halfway point for me and a really nice sort of opportunity for us to spend some time alone before I get back home and into a busy schedule. This row was the first time that I'd been away, leaving somebody very special behind. And although it was very difficult in that we missed each other, I also gained huge strength from her support, talking to her every day, multiple times a day perhaps. And so I know that, you know, I will miss her when I go back out to Alaska, but I know that actually our relationship is all the stronger for it. And I'm just really excited with this new addition to the journey, the kayaking leg through Alaska and sort of cycling time through Alaska and down through Canada and into the States, in that there'll be more opportunities for Lucy to come out and join me. So in fact, when we return, my kayaking partner, Justine, and I, when we return in the spring, Lucy's going to come with us and do some hiking at the start of that journey. So, no, I'm really excited and just feel so grateful for her support and happy that we get to spend these next few months in the UK together whilst I train and prepare for the next leg of the journey.
Has your body been holding up well physically from the kind of exertions that you're putting it through?
So far, I've been lucky, I think. Few niggles that sort of physiotherapy and some back manipulations can sort out, and it's just that sort of standard sort of run of infections, I suppose, when your body gets run down, you know, that you pick up from time to time. So overall, I'm really pleased with the way my body's handled everything so far.
That's fabulous. You're asking a lot of it, but you're 28 years old, you're strong, you're fit, and let's hope that continues through the rest of your journey. It's been an amazing one so far. Where can people go to learn more about what you do, learn about the charities that you represent, and the remainder of your journey?
The best place to go for sort of an overview of the story so far, and then to follow along as we continue with sort of preparations, and then as the journey gets underway again, is my website, which is sarahouten.com. And the spelling for Sarah Outen is Sarah with an H and then O-U-T-E-N. And there's links to blogs, footage, videos, Twitter, as you mentioned, the charities that I'm supporting as well, and links for people to get involved as well, you know, sending in questions, and particularly links with schools and sort of young people's groups. I'm always really keen to connect.
That's great. And I apologize for mispronouncing your name throughout this interview. Sarah Outen, not Sarah Outen. And I want to thank you so much for giving us your time, and we're going to follow the rest of your journey, and it's just an accomplishment that very, very few, you're one of very, very few people on earth to be able to say that you've done what you're doing. So thank you again for joining us.
That's very kind. Thank you. And perhaps if I come through Minnesota on the bike, then we'll be able to hook up in person.
Oh, I sure hope so. We've been speaking with Sarah Outen, and Sarah is an adventurer. She's in the midst of her around-the-world expedition from London to London. London to London is the name of the expedition. She's completed over half of it. It's all by human power, and we wish her the best of luck.